gone. I was down to listen to what my
You're listening to Bad Health Blues on WIOX Community Radio on the program Health Center in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program. Well, one of the joys of getting older that I know about is anticipating that you'll be eligible for Medicare. You think that you're going to be spending less on health care because you've paid into this program throughout your working life. But I did recently a quick assessment of how much I'm spending on health care, even with Medicare, the traditional Medicare program, and realized that it's not quite the rosy picture I had anticipated. Well, AARP has been following the out-of-pocket spending on the traditional Medicare program for about 8 years now. And their most recent analysis is a little bit concerning. And here to talk with us about the new AARP report on beneficiaries in traditional Medicare, out-of-pocket spending for health care, is Claire Noel Miller, Senior Strategic Policy Advisor for AARP's Public Policy Institute. Claire, thank you so much for joining me today on Health Center in the Catskills.
Thank you for having me, Diana. I'm really excited to be here.
And you all do really interesting work there at AARP. And so I know that following these kinds of issues really is aligned with your mission, your focus on people who are sort of late middle-aged and into their older years. And you do a lot of advocacy work around there. So I'm around these issues. So I wanted to start with talking about, with this report, you focused on traditional Medicare, and maybe we should define what we mean by traditional Medicare versus the Medicare Advantage program.
Yeah, before I answer your question, Diana, I just want to spend a minute to provide a little bit of context for our discussion today. Medicare is really a pillar of American healthcare. The program has been around since 1965, and today there are about 66 million individuals who are enrolled in Medicare, and enrollment is projected to continue increasing rapidly in the near future. Medicare's health benefits are organized in different parts, with each part covering a different type of benefit. And this is where what I like to call the alphabet soup starts. So maybe just bear with me here for just a little bit.
And Claire, before that, though, I also want to just interject that Medicare is not, I refer to it for older people, but it's not just for older people, right?
That's absolutely right. There's about 12% of the Medicare population that is eligible, not because they're 65 and older, but because they have long-term care disabilities. So that's not an insignificant number of people. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So what I was saying is that there's a number of parts to Medicare, and, you know, many of your listeners may be aware of this, but Medicare is so complicated, it's always worth a little refresher. So Medicare Part A is the program's hospital insurance. It covers things like inpatient hospital care and hospice care. Then there's Medicare Part B, which is the program's medical insurance. This is the part of Medicare that covers your doctor's visits and other types of outpatient care. And then there is Medicare Part D, which covers prescription drugs, that you pick up at the pharmacy. Now, you probably noticed that I skipped the letter C, and I'll say a little bit about why in just a second. So now let me turn directly to your question. People can choose to receive their Medicare coverage in one of two ways. The first option is through traditional Medicare, and the second option is to enroll in a private health plan that has a contract with Medicare to provide Medicare's benefit. This second option is often called Medicare Advantage, or simply MA. Another name for it is Medicare Part C. So there's that letter C that I skipped earlier when I was talking about the parts, the different parts of Medicare.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just to give you a sense, nationally today, there's about half of the people that are covered through traditional Medicare, and the remainder gets their Medicare coverage through Medicare Advantage. Mm-hmm.
And on Health Center in the Catskills, we've done some other programs on some of the concerns that have arisen around Medicare Advantage, some of the false advertising or problems with advertising, as well as some of the issues with getting, once you really need acute care, getting those services approved, in the front loading, if you will, by a part of the marketing strategy is telling you, well, we're going to cover things that Medicare doesn't cover, like your vision, your hearing, et cetera. That can be really a selling point initially for Medicare Advantage, but then with these other concerns that are arising with the Medicare Advantage program, I've been talking to some people who are saying, well, I think I'm going to shift back into traditional Medicare. But your study says there's also a side, an angle to traditional Medicare that they need to think about.
Yeah. Let me just pick up on what you were saying and just talk a little bit about the differences between traditional Medicare and MA, because, you know, it's important to know that these two programs exist, but it's also important to understand how they differ. There are a lot of differences between the two, but I think I want to just highlight a couple. One key difference is that people with traditional Medicare can see any provider that takes Medicare anywhere in the United States. But, as you were alluding to, for people in Medicare Advantage, generally, you have to see a provider that's in your plan's network. Another big difference between the two options of Medicare is the coverage of extra benefits. You just talked about that. MA covers the same Part A and B benefits as traditional Medicare, but MA plans typically, not all, but typically would also cover prescription drugs and also some additional benefits like dental, vision, or hearing. And that's not to say that people with traditional Medicare can't get their dental coverage, but they typically would have to purchase a separate insurance policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to highlight one last difference, Diana, just because I think it's really relevant to our conversation today about out-of-pocket spending. And that's the fact that under traditional Medicare, there's no limit on the total out-of-pocket cost people can incur. And so many people with traditional Medicare buy additional coverage. It's often referred to as a Medigap policy, or, they can get this type of coverage through a former employer. And the purpose of this additional coverage is to help pay for some of the out-of-pocket costs that they are responsible for under Medicare. By comparison, MA plans all MA plans, because this is in the law, MA plans have to cap the total amount that people pay out-of-pocket.
Per year or lifetime?
It's a per-year cap. It changes every year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So with that, I think it makes sense then that it's apples and oranges when you're looking at out-of-pocket costs. And the report that you all recently released looked at the issue that you have tracked over the last, I think, 8 years, has been the traditional program. So tell us what you found in terms of out-of-pocket spending in that program.
So we've been primarily focused on the traditional Medicare program. And this is absolutely not because we're uninterested in how much MA enrollees are spending for healthcare. The reason that we've been focusing on traditional Medicare has to do with a lack of quality data. Data that's reliable enough to examine this question in MA. And, you know, before I go on to talking about sort of the findings of the report, I really want to emphasize that this is an area where we really need a lot better data. And more research to understand how much MA enrollees are spending, but also how their spending differs from the spending of people who choose to receive their Medicare through the traditional program. So about the report, in a nutshell, what this report shows is that contrary to a popular belief, many, many people with traditional Medicare end up spending a significant amount out of pocket to meet their healthcare needs. There are generally two broad categories of expenses. The first one is premiums. There's your Medicare premiums for Part B, for Part A, for Part D. And then there are premiums for additional things that I just mentioned, Medigap plan, or a plan through your former employer. And then, as I said also before, a lot of people opt to purchase additional coverage for dental, vision, or hearing care. So, you know, premiums, that's cost category one. And then the other sort of type of cost that people incur is what we often refer to as cost sharing. And that is the portion of cost of the service that you are responsible for once you actually use the service. So premiums, you pay regardless whether you use the service or not. That's just the cost of having health care. And cost sharing, you pay once you use the service. So your listeners probably know that when they go to the doctor, to their doctor under Medicare Part B, they are responsible for a 20% copayment, you know, for that visit.
20% or $20?
20% of the total cost of the doctor's visit under Medicare Part B.
Okay.
In this second category of cost sharing, there's also all the services that are not covered under Medicare. So, you know, if you don't have additional dental insurance and you receive a dental service, you would typically be responsible for the entirety of the cost of that service.
Now, Claire, let me just ask you, though, the cost that you're talking about, the premiums are not covered by your Medigap insurance. But what about the co-pays and other expenses?
So the data that we use is data for actual spending by people with Medicare. So it takes into account what people actually paid when they use a healthcare service, net of what any Medigap or other supplemental insurance may have paid on that person's behalf. Mm-hmm. So this is really true out-of-pocket spending. And the bottom line from this study is that all of these costs across premiums and across cost-sharing really add up. Based on the data, the average person with traditional Medicare spent $6,663 a year, so almost $7,000 a year on healthcare. Now, remember, this is an average, and some people end up spending more than this roughly $7,000 figure. In fact, the data show that 1 in 10 people with Medicare spend at least $12,000 a year to meet their health care needs.
And
so what, you know.
And this out-of-pocket spending that they're doing includes the premium payments. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. This is the total amount, including premiums, the different types of premiums that I talked about earlier, and including all of their cost sharing, whether the services are covered under traditional Medicare or not.
Great. So how has this changed over time? You've been following this over time and considering inflation.
Yeah. So, that's right. I think we've actually been looking at these data since 2013, maybe even earlier. And the latest update that we're talking about today looked at data from 2019, which was the most, you know, the most recent survey year at the time that I was doing the analysis for this report. So, yes, at this point, we have a little bit of a long-term perspective on this question. So what we see from the data, and, you know, which makes sense, is that the dollar amount that people with Medicare are spending on healthcare is increasing over time. And that's to be expected, right, because it's reflecting inflation over time. So I think that a better way to think about this question when you look at it over time is to look at the burden of out-of-pocket spending. So what share of people's income is being dedicated to healthcare? And what we show in this report is that about half of the Medicare population spends 16% or more of their income on healthcare. And that burden has remained remarkably consistent over time, as far as we have been tracking the data. And so in a way, this is a bit of good news in that at least the burden of healthcare spending on Medicare beneficiaries.
Whoops. I think we've lost Claire Noel, so we're going to go back, see if I can get her on. Yep. Okay, let me see if I can get her back on. And in the meantime, enjoy some more healthcare blues. Is that right? Let's see here. Yeah, bad health blues. We're going to go back here. Claire, are you there?
I'm here, Diana.
Good, good. So let's pick up where we left off. Not sure what happened there, but the phone's been acting a little strange today, so I think it's probably on our end. So, yeah, go ahead. And about the change in the cost to people as a percentage of their income is really not changed over time. There's some stability there.
Right, exactly. So you heard sort of the gist of what I was trying to say, which is that over time, we're seeing that, you know, the burden of how much people with traditional Medicare spend out of pocket for their health care is remain remarkably stable.
So what are the implications of this report? Why should people care? What are the implications for policy? We have about 7 minutes left.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. You know, I think what you're asking is, you know, now that we know all of this data, where do we go from here? You know, why does this matter? And I think I want to give you a two-part answer to your question. Part one is that it's really critical for policymakers to understand the reality that many people with traditional Medicare spend substantial financial resources on healthcare. And that contrary to a popular belief, Medicare is not free. Healthcare expenses can consume a significant share of many traditional Medicare beneficiaries' incomes. When policymakers, have to evaluate any proposal to redesign Medicare, they really must keep the implications, be they direct or indirect implications, on beneficiaries' out-of-pocket spending front and center. I think another key point is that policymakers should work towards closing some of the gaps in insurance coverage, for example, dental coverage, that can lead to substantial expenses for some people with traditional Medicare. The second part of my answer is sort of shifting gears a little bit, is recognizing that there are also some lessons here for people with traditional Medicare and Medicare generally. One sort of lesson that I'll highlight is that it's important to understand, to the extent possible, what your financial responsibilities are under the program, to minimize the likelihood of any bad surprises. And there are some resources out there to help with that. AARP has some resources. Of course, Medicare has a website, medicare.gov. And you can also call 1-800-MEDICARE. And then there's a resources that is, you know, really a great resource, but a lot of people don't know about, which is called the State Health Insurance Programs, often referred to as SHIP programs. SHIP programs are staffed by volunteers that provide beneficiaries with unbiased and free information on Medicare generally, but also specifically on the out-of-pocket responsibilities under the program. Sticking with sort of what beneficiaries can learn from this, I think another really important aspect to highlight is that there exist programs that help individuals with limited resources pay for Medicare premiums, and in some cases for their cost sharing as well. For example, there's the Medicare Savings Program, which can really be a game changer for many people. But unfortunately, many people who are eligible for that program are not enrolled. So it's worth, it's worth your while as a Medicare beneficiary or somebody who's, transitioning to Medicare coverage, considering whether you might be eligible for this program and a couple of others.
And how do you find that out?
Every state has a state health insurance program. So I'm sorry, I don't know the exact name of the state, the SHIP program in New York State, but you can just Google SHIP, S-H-I-P programs, and you'll get a link to your state and county SHIP program.
Great. So that's S-H-I-P.
That's right. And that stands, again, for State Health Insurance Program.
Great. And you're right. I just Googled it on my phone. I said New York NY State SHIP Program. And it came up with New York Health Plans and getting coverage. So that's a very good resource.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Diana, I just want to sort of end on something that I think is just really important. I think ultimately, you know, what this is all about is making sure that people with Medicare really have affordable access to the healthcare that they need. You know, we know that financial barriers can be a huge hurdle to getting, you know, the care that you need. And so it's really important to recognize that healthcare is not free under Medicare.
Yeah. And one question I have very quickly is, there's research out there, or at least I thought there was. There was a little bit ago. I haven't checked in lately, about the fact the co-payments really don't do what they're supposed to do. They were supposed to encourage people to only use health services when they absolutely had to. And I think what was found is that they were more of a barrier to getting timely care than actually supporting people who are overusing care. Is that still true? And is that something that AARP is looking at?
So I can't speak, Diana, specifically to the issue of co-payments directly, but I do know that, as I said, you know, ensuring that older adults have access to the care they need is a really big priority for AARP, something that we've been working on and advocating for, you know, for a very long time. And, you know, we recognize that half the people who are enrolled in Medicare live on incomes that are under $30,000. Mm. And so, you know, a co-payment may be, you know, like a really, really big deal. So I know, for instance, that the co-payment for a hospital, an inpatient hospital stay in 2023 is $1,600. Yeah. So when you're living on an income of less than $30,000, that $1,600, you know, Part A co-payment is big. It's a huge portion of your income. So, you know, be it the co-payment on the cost-sharing side or the premiums, these things all add up.
So just to wrap up here, if people would like more information on what AARP is doing on this kind of an issue, this issue specifically, and to find the report, how do they do so?
So your listeners can go to AARP Public Policy Institute to find the report. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of resources there, not just on out-of-pocket spending for healthcare, but really rich resources on Medicare generally. So that's where they can go to find that information.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, we've been talking with Claire Noel Miller, Senior Strategic Policy Advisor for AARP's Public Policy Institute. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about what I think is a really important report. And I'm pleased that you were able to share it with our listeners. We do have an audience up here that is aging. And so I think it's a topic that is of great interest to many people up in the Catskill region. So thank you, Claire.
Diana, thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciated the opportunity, and I hope this was helpful.
It was very helpful. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You too.
Yeah, good information. And just for, I think, disclosure purposes, AARP does sell the Medigap insurance. Well, or they brand it. They have an arrangement with United Health Group. So there is an interest that they have in the traditional Medicare program. I'm not sure about the Medicare Advantage program. So good information. If you're on Medicare, Google. And you need help with those premium payments, Google NY State SHIP, S-H-I-P program, and you'll see some resources and AARP. Well, you've been listening to Health Center in the Catskills, and Bob Stewart just walked into the studio. Hi there, Bob, with that beautiful granddaughter that he has. I want to just tell listeners that if you'd like to hear some of these Health Center programs, you can go to healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. I'm Diana Mason. You've been listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio.